The World a Camp. The procession wended from the gloom of falling snow. The burners walked 10 abreast in their paint-spattered clothes, their red-speckled armour, each of them holding high a torch, light falling hard on their hollow faces. Everyone else had to scrape out of their way, press themselves to the buildings and the doorways. Even Vic and her constables and their prisoners. Now came the coffin, borne on the shoulders of 8 women looking mighty cold in white dresses, slush-stained around the hems. There was an antique feel to it all, as if the funeral procession of great juvens had marched from the pages of the storybooks for this one moment.
"Who's in the casket?" grunted Vic.
"Some burner led the revolt in Keln, I heard."
Tallow glanced about, then leaned close to whisper,
"They say he was killed by royalists, but he was a moderate."
"Meaning what?"
Extreme last week was moderate now. By next week, it would have become collaboration.
"The rumour is Judge done away with him. They say she's drunk on blood, gone mad with it. To go mad, you have to be sane to begin with."
Vic watched the shuffling column fade into the snow, off towards the mausoleum of the Great Change, not even half built beside the Four Corners, where the heroes of the Breakers and Burners were being laid to rest.
"Let's move,"
she called, trudging on through the slush and the crowds and the frosty cold, past a great heap of burning books, pages occasionally floating on fire into the night, and down the echoing entrance tunnel of the Agrient. On the street that was once the Kingsway, the statues had been replaced, or at least their faces, their hands, their clothes had. Clumsy alterations had turned them from centuries of kings and their advisers into miners, builders, farmers, nursing mothers. Heroes of the common folk. Rizenau's plans, cheaply realised, awkwardly posed, something pained and accusatory in their clumsily carved expressions.
"Bloody hell, it's cold."
Tallow hugged himself, blathering steam into the early darkness.
"My sister's got ice on the inside of her window. She spends half her time queuing for coal, for bread, for meat. When she gets to the end, often as not, they've run out. There was some lunatic on the corner screeching, 'Long live the king,' all night, preaching that Harrod would rise from his grave and bring order, and Baez himself was flying to the city on a great eagle to appoint a new closed council." "Wish there was a great eagle coming," muttered Vic. "We could eat it."
They tramped past the court of the people, light burning from its windows. They were trying groups of a dozen now, till dusk and beyond, those with evidence against them and those with none, mixed together, as if their cases were all connected, so the guilt of one would splatter the rest, and they all could be dragged down, like swimmers chained together. The only folk who got acquitted these days were those who denounced freely, those who denounced anyone and everyone, denounced their lovers, their parents, their children. The House of Purity was overflowing with bankers and clerks. Traitors against the Great Change, suspected of aristocratic plots, foreign conspiracies, royalist schemes, arrested by the burners and awaiting trial, had to be squeezed in elsewhere. They'd made the fortress of the Knights Herald into a prison, then the walled treasury buildings. Families traipsed the courtyards, begging to know where their loved ones were being held, gathered in the snow outside the windows, with children on their shoulders for a glimpse of Daddy.
"I hear they're setting up new courts," said Tallow.
"I guess Judge can't pronounce the death sentences fast enough on her own."
"Aiming at one in each district of Adua."
"In each district?"
"And each town in Middleland. 3 in Keln, 2 in Valbec. They say they'll have to set up more when Forrest and his royalists are finally brought to justice. They're appointing new magistrates to hear all the cases. I hear they're paid by the conviction."
"Fuck," whispered Vic. New places of execution, too. I guess they'll need them. They tried to use the bell tower on the old Spicer's Guildhall, but, well, it wasn't high enough. Vic winced. Fuck. They didn't all die right off. Had to have a burner at the bottom with a pickaxe to finish the poor bastards. All right, Tello, I get the picture. It was coming to something when a child of the prison camps was finding life in the capital too dark for comfort. Her mind wandered back there, to the camps, to her own father coughing blood in that cold winter. She'd tried to trade for a blanket, work for an empty sack, steal a little knuckle of coal, but it was never enough. Her mother wasted away to nothing. So thin at the end you could see her bones. Her sister's screams behind her in the mine as the floodwater rushed into the tunnel. Vic came to a stop in the snow, watching the constables herding her latest batch of prisoners across the square of martyrs.
"I'd hoped it might get better," she muttered, "but it's getting worse."
Tallow hopped from one foot to the other for warmth.
"You could have said that any time since I met you.
That's your comfort? We're not at the bottom yet? Judge is more powerful now than the king ever was. Even Herod the Great answered to Baez. Judge answers to no one but the fire. She won't be happy till she's burned it all to the ground."
"Not even then, I dare say."
Tallow glanced towards another sorry set of the accused being driven hunched through the snow.
"But you might want to keep your voice down."
"This was meant to set us all free. Instead, we've turned the whole Agrient into a prison." Vic frowned at the names cut into the stones under her feet, half seen through the slush. She wondered if Sibylt's was there somewhere. She remembered lying in his narrow bed, talking about how they'd change the world. She'd known they were dreams, but they'd been pretty dreams, at least. Was this the better world he'd died for? "We've made the whole city into a camp, the whole union. You always say we should stand with the winners."
One of the prisoners broke from the line, chains on her ankles clanking, rag-wrapped hands clutching. Vic was ready to punch her, almost did it, but all she wanted was to push something into Vic's hands, a folded paper.
"You've a kind face. Take this to my daughter, please."
"Come here," grunted one of the burners, grabbing her under the arm without malice, without gentleness, the way a shepherd grabs a sheep.
"Sorry about that, Inspector."
"Please,"
the woman blubbed as he dragged her away. Vic knew she had nothing close to a kind face. A bag of chisels was how she'd always thought of what she saw in the mirror. She'd been given the letter, not Tallow or someone softer, because she looked like someone who got things done. She unfolded it, fingers cold and sluggish even in her gloves.
"What does it say?"
asked Tallow. There was no poetry to it, scrawled on a scrap of candle wrapper with a stub of charcoal from a dead fire. "Just love and best wishes and keep going and don't forget me." She realized she'd no idea who to take it to, no idea who the woman had been. Could have been anyone, could almost have been Vic herself, except that she had no one to write a letter to.
"It says goodbye."
She crumpled the paper in her fist. "Get the prisoners where they're going." And she turned and strode off, back the way they'd come, boots crunching in her own footprints, already turning dirty white with new snow. Seemed the great change had been almost as tough on Styrian spies as on everyone else. The warren of gloomy cellars under the sign of the Fishwoman reminded Vic more of the mines of Angland than ever. Not only was it underground, but freezing too, puddles of icy meltwater from the streets above gathered in the corners. There was no music, no dancers, few patrons of any kind. The barman stood where he had on her last visit,
the same magnificent array of glassware behind him. But a lot of the bottles were down to dribbles. Seemed a fine metaphor for where the great change had taken them, all in all. Same bottles, but empty.
"Victory in Dan Teufel graces my establishment for a second time," said the barman, raising one orange brow at her.
"No Dans any more, remember? Where's your monkey?"
"Off sick."
"Shame. Of the two of you, he was my favourite." The barman grinned.
"Most of my clientele would concur."
"Have you got any of that piss you poured me last time? What did you call it?"
"Swarfine, and sadly no. Supply of late, what with the weather and the politics, is something of a nightmare. If you can get stale bread from the end of the road, you're doing well. To get liquor in from Jakra requires a magician."
His hand skimmed across the bottles, then plucked one out.
"Why don't you..."
And he slipped a glass in front of her and poured a shot.
"Try this instead."
She grimaced as she tasted it.
"Damn, that's sweet.
Sometimes we need challenge. Sometimes we need comfort."
"Do I look that bad?"
"You look far better than most in Adua." She drank again.
"That bad.
I don't suppose our mutual friend in Tarlins, the woman with all the whispers, might be tempted to intercede in affairs on this side of the Circle Sea? Help put an end to this chaos? Get the liquor flowing again?" The barman gave a sad smile.
"I wouldn't demean us both by making such a suggestion to our mutual friend. Her mistress, lest we forget, is far from the most open-handed of rulers at the best of times, and positively delights in chaos on this side of the Circle Sea. I hear the news makes her giggle daily over breakfast. Didn't have the Serpent of Tarlins down as a giggler. No one did till now."
Vic pushed her empty glass at him. Like most drinks, it got better with time.
"A little optimistic of me, I'll admit, if not to say desperate."
He poured her another.
"There is no place for either optimism or desperation in our business."
Vic raised her glass.
"To pessimism and hard heads."
"I can drink to that." And he slipped another glass onto the bar.
"The union, I fear, is beyond help. This great change is a fever that has to burn itself out. But you always struck me as a woman who'd save herself."
She stopped sipping to watch him over the rim of her glass.
"If you decided Adua no longer held any charms..."
He glanced up and down the vaulted cellar.
"Which would be thoroughly understandable. I expect our mutual friend would still welcome you with open arms." "Spring in Tarlins, eh? The weather alone would be worth the trip. The time comes..."
And he swallowed his shot in one and slapped the empty glass down on the bar.
"You have to get out."
She slowly nodded. Wouldn't be the first time she'd got out. Saved herself in the camps, hadn't she? And in Rostod during the rebellion, and in Valbek during the uprising. Saved herself, even if she saved no one else. Truth was, she wouldn't be missed. She'd made sure of it. Never stay in a place you can't walk straight out of without a backward glance. Never own a thing you can't leave behind. Never make a friend you can't turn your back on. A life that leaves no marks. She thought about that as if for the first time. The people she'd tricked, betrayed, left behind. And she wondered, is a life that leaves no marks a life at all? She hadn't come for a way out. Not really. She'd come to try one on and see how it fit.
"Can't say I'm not tempted."
She thought about that last look on her brother's face before they dragged him away. The last words Sybalt said before he cut his own throat.
"But the time comes..."
She drained her glass and set it down.
"You have to stand up." Where are you going?
She set a coin spinning on the counter and left without looking back.
To stand with the losers.